What a shame that they're not here to actually celebrate this.
William Russell.
I was more respectful for it. I was actually rather opposed to it in a strange sort of way.
Well, you thought telly wasn't quite as good as being in the movies.
That's right. I used to talk with Bob Shaw about this all the time. You know, do you think we ought to do it? You know what'll happen, boy? You'll be riding down Fifth Avenue on a horse. Nonsense, Bob. You know, and all that happened. It was great fun. That's high up in my requirements of life.
William Russell, Peter Purvis, Carol Ann Ford, Jeremy Young and Waris Hussain. Thank you all very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us here.
The Reunion was presented by Sue McGregor, produced by Peter Curran, and it's a Whistledown production for BBC Radio 4. On Longwave now, it's time for an act of worship led by the Reverend Dr. Michael Ford. Here on FM, our book of the week, Mom and Me and Mom. Maya Angelou was in Sweden for the filming of her first screenplay when she began to feel frozen out by the actors and crew. Finding it hard to cope, she rang her mother, the formidable Vivian Baxter.
When the plane arrived, my little mother came tipping down the steps in her high-heeled shoes. She was in her typical Vivian Baxter dress, carrying her sable stole, and her sparkling diamonds were flashing. As soon as she was through security, we embraced, and she demanded to go to the bar. My mother said to the bartender, "Give my daughter a scotch and water. You have whatever you like and give everybody in this place a drink." My smart, glamorous, sophisticated mother sat back in her stool. As usual, she was in charge. I sublet an apartment, and she stayed with me for the entire shooting of the movie. Each morning, I went to the location to braid the star's hair. Each morning, the crew would hold up action until I'd finished. The director and the actors stood together in silence until I left. For the first few days after Mother's arrival, I used all my control to hold back the tears, but Mother's presence strengthened me. As I returned across the little lawn to our building, I would see her standing in the window, waiting with a cup in her hand and a big smile on her face. Having her there made me feel like a little girl. She stroked my back and murmured to me. I stopped feeling sorry for myself. Mother asked if there were any likable cast members. When I said yes, she said I could invite them. She made fried chicken, mashed potatoes, and greens. The bar was always stocked. She was a raconteur and would entertain my friends as if they were her friends. She was irresistible when she wanted to be, and everyone fell in love with her. I noticed after a while, on the set, people started treating me differently. The star began to smile when I was braiding her hair. The man who'd threatened to leave us in the lurch was back saying what a great writer I was and how honored he was. One morning, as I was leaving, the director said I didn't have to leave the set anymore. I began to wonder what made them change. I came to the realization that it was because I had a mother. My mother spoke highly of me and to me. But more important, whether they met her or simply heard about her, she had my back. In Stockholm, she shed her protective love down around me, and without knowing why, people sensed that I had value. Lady had bonded with a few friends from the Women's Elks organization and the Eastern Stars organization and formed a group she called the Stockton Black Women for Humanity. She included some of her white sister friends, one judge, one seamstress who sold exquisite fashions, and two nurses. She called them honorary black women. They collected clothes, and Lady used one of her garages as a closet, arranging them in sizes and colors. The Stockton Black Women for Humanity gave scholarships of $350 to students as they finished the 11th grade. My mother said Many students dropped out after the 11th grade because they didn't have the popular clothes to wear in their senior year of high school. The scholarships were given as money and gift cards for students to use at Sears and JCPenney. I went to visit Mother in her Stockton home one afternoon. She couldn't stop laughing. A month earlier, the mayor of a nearby town had telephoned her and said, "Lady Baxter, we know you're famous for knowing everybody in Stockton and for being kind and generous to everybody. I am the mayor of this town, and we have a situation that I haven't been able to improve. There's a man and woman, their teenage children and his mother, all living in a car. They've been seeking employment for 2 weeks to no avail. I wonder, could you help them at all?" Mother told her, "Have them come to my house tomorrow morning by 7 a.m. I'll do my best." The next morning, the family arrived, and Lady sent them to the garage to find clean clothes, gave them towels, and sent them off to shower and dress. When they returned, she cooked a large breakfast, and they ate heartily. Lady had called her friends and found jobs in supermarkets bagging groceries and jobs in gas stations and in parking lots. Before nightfall, she'd found them accommodation. Weeks passed, and the mayor called my mother. "Lady Baxter, thank you very much for what you did for that family. I'm in Stockton, and I would love to come and have a cup of coffee with you." My mother said, "Come." A few minutes later, her doorbell rang, and she opened the door. A middle-aged white woman said, "I'm looking for Lady Baxter." My mother said, "You're looking at her." When Mother told me that, laughing out loud, she said the mayor's eyes nearly popped out of her head. She expected her to be white. The mayor was white, and the family she sent to my mother was white. She didn't understand that Stockton Black Women for Humanity were gathered to serve all humanity. White, black, Spanish-speaking and Asian, fat, thin, rich, poor, gay, and straight. Mother said, "The mayor sat down and drank half a cup of coffee. She was so uncomfortable, she said she had to go. I saw her to the door, and the Lord knows, I felt sorry for her." My mother's gifts of courage to me were both large and small. The latter are woven so subtly into the fabric of my psyche that I can hardly distinguish where she stops and I begin. The large lessons are highlighted in my memory, like technicolor stars on a midnight sky. I met loves and lost loves. I dared to travel to Africa to allow my son to finish high school in Cairo. I lived with a South African freedom fighter who petitioned for an end to apartheid. It was my mother's love and support that encouraged me to dare to live my life with pizzazz. I was offered a lifetime professorship at Wake Forest University as Reynolds Professor of American Studies. I thanked the administration and accepted the invitation. I would go to North Carolina to teach for 1 year, and if I liked it, I would teach a second year. I found after teaching 1 year that I had misunderstood my calling. I had thought that I was a writer who could teach. I found to my surprise that I was actually a teacher who could write. I settled in at Wake Forest to be a teacher for the rest of my life. My mother complimented me on my decision and said I would do wonders. The telephone call brought me across the country to my mother's hospital bed. Although she was a pale ashen color, she smiled to see me. Her doctor's prognosis was unpromising. Mother's ailment was lung cancer, along with emphysema, and they estimated that she might have at most 3 months to live. When I asked her, "Would you come to North Carolina and let me take care of you?" She brightened and whispered, "Yes." I returned to North Carolina to prepare. I had a large, bright room painted a pale pink, complemented by colorful floral draperies. The room was cheerful and welcoming, and I hung paintings and family photographs. When the car arrived bringing my mother, she was so weak she was unable to stand. The driver picked her up and brought her into the house in his arms. She sat on the side of the bed and looked around, then gave me a wide smile. "Baby, it's beautiful. You decorated for me, didn't you? You painted it pink because you know I love pink. I am going to get well here." Her statement was not weak with hopefulness. It was strong with certainty. When the North Carolina doctors assessed her, they discontinued chemotherapy and instead prescribed a therapy of radiology. My mother's spirits rose every day. After 2 months, one of the physicians said there was no explanation for her recovery. Salt and pepper hair began to grow on her bald head. She had enough appetite to ask for substantial food and even to offer to cook it for herself. Within 6 months, she gained weight and strength. She began entertaining friends and went with me to church. With Mother's steady improvement, I was encouraged to return to my work, which was lecturing around the country. Mother asked if I'd send for her closest friend, Aunt Aria, and I said yes. Aunt Aria arrived, and right away I wished I'd sent for her earlier. She and my mother laughed and giggled, and my house was wonderful to be in. An invitation arrived that stunned and thrilled me. England's University of Exeter invited me to come and teach for 3 weeks in their hallowed halls as distinguished visiting professor. I thanked the administrator, but said no. I couldn't leave North Carolina because my mother was gravely ill. When Vivian Baxter heard I'd rejected the invitation, she called me to her room. "Go," she whispered. "Show them you spell your name, W-O-M-A-N. I'll be here when you get back." I went. Each day I telephoned to check on my mother's recovery. Then one day, I decided to leave Exeter and fly home. I was picked up at the airport and taken to my mother's hospital room. Vivian Baxter was in a coma. I spoke to her anyway. On the third day, I took her hand and said, "I've been told some people need to be given permission to leave. I don't know if you're waiting, but I can say you may have done all you came here to do. You have been a hard worker. White, black, Asian, and Latino women ship out of the San Francisco port because of you. You have been a ship fitter, a nurse, a real estate broker, and a barber. Many men, and if my memory serves me right, a few women risked their lives to love you. You were a terrible mother of small children, but there has never been anyone greater than you as a mother of a young adult." She squeezed my hand twice. I kissed her fingers, then I went home. I awakened at dawn and raced downstairs in my pajamas. I drove to the hospital and double-parked my car. I didn't wait for the elevators. I ran up the stairs to her floor. The nurse said, "She just left." I looked at my mother's lifeless form and thought about her passion and wit. I knew she deserved a daughter who loved her and had a good memory. And she got one.
Adjoa Ando has been reading Mom and Me and Mum by Maya Angelou. It was abridged and produced by Jane Marshall Productions.